This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Well, we have two topics today under the general rubric, only a slight stretch, I think, fighting for the little guy. Stacey Champion is here. She's been fighting APS on a number of issues, rate increases and the like. But first, Richard Such is as an attorney who will discuss the financial exploitation of baby boomers and some recent changes in Arizona law. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Well, you point out that there's been some change, recent change in Arizona law, and tell us what problem it was that addressed and what changes have been made.
So in May, your legislature adopted an amendment to the APS, or Adult Protective Services.
Yeah, you got to be careful law with that. Our next APS is also the name of the utility, and our next guest is here to talk about the APS, the utility. So I don't like that acronym here. It'll confuse our audience.
Well, Adult Protective Services is widely used. The acronym is APS, but it doesn't have anything to do with
utility. In Arizona, it does not mean that.
Yep. No, it's the Adult Protective Services in all the 50 states exist to protect people from abuse, vulnerable people and seniors. And so your Arizona law, you had a law that has recently been amended. It was amended in May. It'll be effective in August. And it has been retooled to allow reports out when financial exploitation of seniors and vulnerable persons are suspected.
What kind of financial exploitation does this cover?
So the exploitation can take a lot of forms. I tell people just to think of a larceny in the old sense, any kind of theft. But for example, somebody can call and claim to be from the IRS, and that if they don't make a wire payment of $20,000, they will be arrested.
Now, presumably, that's always been illegal. Did they beef up enforcement?
Correct. But what the financial services industry has not had, and now has in more and more states, more than 26 of the states, now have laws that allow people to make reports when the financial advisor hears of something that seems like exploitation. So let's say that client calls in and says, I need $20,000 to pay the IRS or I'm going to go to jail. The financial services business now has a tool to make a report without worrying that privacy laws will be implicated and they'll have some liability. So it's meant to allow reporting when reporting is appropriate due to suspected exploitation.
Okay. What else is covered?
Well, any kind of inappropriate activity. I mean, what the statistics show is that 90% of the time, the exploited person is exploited by somebody in their own family, or a caregiver, or a guardian, or a power of attorney. Those are the most likely suspects, the bad actors doing these things. They can simply, you know, write checks against the client's account. They can steal money. They can transfer assets. It can take any number of forms, and the form of the larceny is growing year by year. The estimates on it are staggering. Into the, you know, $20-30 billion a year countrywide. And it is largely underreported because people are embarrassed or ashamed that they've been taken advantage of. So a lot, like a lot of other crimes, people are sometimes reluctant to come forward and talk about the exploitation they've suffered.
Now, in these kinds of instances where you're talking about, say, somebody with power of attorney starts writing a check for uncovered purposes, has the law been changed in that regard in this last May as well? Was something changed there as well?
No, the criminal laws have been, you know, largely static. Those laws have been around virtually forever. What has changed is the federal level, state level, and regulatory level attention to the problem. As you noted at the top of the show, we've got a huge bubble of persons turning 65 every day. The baby boom population is the largest and most invested segment generation of all time. So this problem that we're seeing, we're far from the end of it. It's going to get worse before it gets better. So these laws are really about reporting and giving immunity to persons that report so that the exploitation can stop. And the second piece of it is transactions can be held or disbursements from the account can be stopped in order to prevent the exploitation. That's the second piece of it, reporting and holding up suspected exploitative transactions.
Now, there's another area when I read this title, financial exploitation, that went through my mind. I wonder if this is covered at all. You hear cases where people have financial advisors who manage your money, and basically they churn investments and have lots of transactions and basically ratchet up transaction cost, which end up in enriching the financial advisor against the interest of the investor. Is that included here at all?
That is not, although the bad actor in an exploitation can be the financial advisor. Usually it's not, but the kind of conduct you describe, again, has been around for a long time. The client's interests are supposed to be considered first, obviously. And things like overtrading an account or executing a transaction without authorization, those things really don't fall within the broad rubric of what we're discussing here, although, you know, arguably they could, but there are civil remedies for those kinds of things, and there's regulatory remedies for those sorts of things. Regulators go after financial advisors that don't do the right thing by their client, and there is an arbitration process and a pretty robust, plaintiff's bar that pursues claims when clients are taken advantage of by financial advisors.
And admittedly, that's a grayer area because there's a general obligation on the part of financial advisors to act in the interest of the client. But in a lot of these cases, you can say, well, I bought this because I thought it was a good thing, and then I bought this because it was a good thing. You look at the pattern, and it doesn't look like it. It looks like it's more in the interest of generating fees, but pretty hard to prove at the margins.
Precisely. And, the exploitation that the statutes, for example, Arizona's amended statute, is meant to cover really does fall more in the category of things that are outright theft. And so it is a clearer case, as you say. It's not as gray. And so these laws really are designed to prevent what amounts to criminal conduct and try to put a stop to it, because, as it said, once the money goes out of the account, it's gone. You're not going to be able to recover, because obviously people that are desperate enough to steal from somebody who's vulnerable or older are probably not the best persons to pursue to get restitution should a remedy be available.
Any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with on this?
No, I think it's good that Arizona is acting. Obviously, you're one of the snowbird states. There's been a lot of interest in what's going on in Arizona, and I think it's good that your legislature has acted, and it's acting consistent with what we see around the country. Our firm covers these laws all around the country, and I'm happy that Arizona acted. And I hope it does some good and prevents harm.
Well, good to hear our legislature doing something right. Richard Such is an attorney with Bresler, Armory & Ross in New Jersey, and thank you for joining the Think Tank.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment with Stacey Champion.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we said we're going to talk about fighting for the little guy. Stacey Champion, the appropriately named Warrior here. You run a public relations firm.
I do.
In fact, I had contact with you before this when you were pushing me to have other people as guests.
That is correct.
I chased you down. Your name may or may not ring a bell, but when I connect the dots, I think it will. You've been reading a lot in the paper about challenges to recent APS rate increases. Well, Stacy's been the primary person beyond that. Started out by yourself, right?
Yes.
Take us back to the beginning. What got you engaged in this? How far back does it go? And take us through the story.
Well, I've lived in Arizona for close to 21 years now. I'm pretty sure I've been an APS customer for that entire time in both northern Arizona and then for the past almost 13 years now down here in Phoenix.
Unless you lived in Tepe Mesa, you probably were.
And so I have always paid attention. I've paid attention to the Arizona Corporation Commission elections, to APS from kind of an environmental standpoint, and was watching the rate case very closely while it was occurring, though I didn't get involved.
This is when?
This would be in 2016, I believe. They filed the rate case.
And by the way, that with rate cases, it's hard to pin that you hesitated on the date. You file an intent. You have to go through three or four steps. It's not a singular point in time.
Right. Yes, exactly. So I believe it was, I believe they originally filed it in 2016. It was approved in August of 2017.
And by the way, let me just backtrack for those who don't know. APS is a publicly regulated utility. It is a private company. And because they are a mandated monopoly, that's why they have a regulate, because otherwise they could charge anything they wanted and you just have to pay it. The Arizona Corporation Commission is charged with regulating APS and with setting rates. And those rates are supposed to be set on the basis of allowing investors in APS to achieve an appropriate rate of return based on their investments.
That's correct.
And now, of course, that's a broad mandate that allows a great deal of discretion. But that's the basic scenario, by the way. SRP is a completely different legal structure. It is actually a public agency with an elected board of directors. Mm-hmm. So the SR people, there's a whole other set of rules. But APS is a private company. Because they are a legal monopoly, if you live in an APS area, you can't buy your electricity from anybody else.
Right, that's right.
I mean, you could go off the grid and generate your own electricity, but that's a whole other thing. Most people who don't go off the grid. They put solar panels and they on a regulated basis, they sell power back, and
that's another show. Yeah,
but basically, if you live in certain areas, for all intents and purposes, you must buy power from APS. And the fact that you have no choice, that monopoly status is what creates the need for a public regulatory body to basically keep them from unlimited capacity.
That's right.
And they have to justify their rate increase. And then, however, the other issue is, all right, the people who make this decision, recently we found that, APS has been contributing to campaigns. And
yep, millions of dollars to the campaigns of those who regulate them, which is also is one of the things that has come out into the light.
Would strike most people as a head scratcher. And then, of course, we have dark money, which means we don't really get to know how much they spent.
Right.
How it got spent. But that's just to set context. We're back to you. You read about a rate increase proposal.
Well,
let's take it from
and
there.
To what the Corporation Commission, the commissioners are charged with, it's not only to make sure there's a fair rate of return for those shareholders, right? But that those rates are just and reasonable to us, the general public, the captive ratepayers. And so after the rate hike was approved by a set of commissioners who I knew had been, for lack of a better phrase bought by those who they were charged to regulate, I was paying very close attention to my own power bills. I'm a single mom. I'm a small business owner. I watch my usage. I try to not run my large appliances during peak times. I do all of these things to conserve power as much as I can. And when I was looking at my own bills post August of 2017,
when the rate effect took place.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. When it went into basically transition rates. So that there were, you know, there's a lot of complexity, I believe, by design. It's extremely wonky. You have to practically be a PhD analyst of some nature to even understand all of the different line items on their bills as it is, which I think most people would agree with.
Well, as a PhD analyst, I would tell you that isn't necessarily sufficient to understand all this.
Yeah, fair enough. Exactly. But there's my point proved, right? So I was paying attention and I was noticing that I was using much less power both on and off peak. And they had advertised to the public, both the Corporation Commission as well as APS, a 4.5% increase on average, or about $6 per customer. And when I started digging in and looking at my bills, I was like, that's bonkers. That's not accurate. And so in paying attention to that, I read an article that Ryan Randazzo, who's covered the Corporation Commission for the Arizona Republic, and so then I decided to act.
We will pick up what you did and what happened when we return in just a moment in the think tank. We're meeting with our guest is Stacey Champion. We're talking about APS rate increases and the like in the think tank.
Sirens call them on.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're here with Stacey Champion, and if you haven't been with us in an earlier segment, Stacey is an ordinary citizen, small business owner, single mom. She in 2016, 2017. Took a look at her APS bill, and the rate of increase didn't seem to conform to what APS said it was, is essentially the story as I understand it. And that's where we left the story. You noticed this. Okay, what happens next?
So I had read this article that Ryan Randazzo with The Republic wrote that discussed a particular statute that allowed for 25 customers to basically file a complaint as to the justness and reasonableness of the rates. And I thought to myself, why hasn't anybody ever tried that, given the fact that everyone was so massively impacted by this? I mean, we're talking about, you know, over a million captive ratepayers across mm-hmm. the state. And having been someone who has started plenty of petition over the course of my life and career.
25. You know, we have people in here who got, 400,000 signatures. 25 doesn't seem all that daunting.
Right, exactly. And so in December of 2017, I created a petition and pushed it out on social media and kind of to my network. And on January 3rd of 2018, is that right? 2018.
Probably because the rate increase was 2017.
Yep. 2018, I submitted a formal complaint with 425 signatures, just to be on the safe side.
That is always what you do with petitions, because they'll find somebody didn't
exactly.
dot an I across a T. That's probably not an excessive number.
Yeah, to the Arizona Corporation Commission, thus opening up this formal complaint over the justness and the reasonableness mm-hmm. of the rate hike, and asking for basically a rehearing, kind of a do-over, given the fact that from everything I had read and researched, there were not good questions asked during the rate case. Mm-hmm. Again, you had a body of elected officials who had massive amounts of money spent on their campaigns by APS to put them there in the first place. And I believe that they just kind of rubber stamped this really large rate hike, which originally both the Corporation Commission staff as well as RUCO, who was supposed to be kind of the consumer
RUCO is supposed
watchdog,
to be the citizen watchdog.
Right. For the utilities. Both of them originally came out saying that not only did they not believe that APS should receive this rate hike, but there should potentially be a decrease given their earnings.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that what is reasonable is based on how much they have invested and they're allowed to get a certain percentage of return. Is that correct?
I think that that's definitely part of it. Mm-hmm. But again, there are so many different things that have come out over the course mm-hmm. of, you know, all of these hearings. Like my complaint hearing was 5 days, five full days. Mm-hmm. And so the things that we learned over the course of this whole long, drawn out process have really uncovered quite a lot. And you know, at the end of the day, they are not going to be doing rate cases in the future like they have been in the past because of all of this work, which is a positive.
Okay. Tell me about what some of those things are that caught your attention.
Well, for instance, the 4.5% average increase, mm-hmm. That is purely to the quote unquote base rate. And what that means.
And what is the base rate?
Exactly.
No. Question. What does base rate mean?
So the base rate is the base rate without all of these adjusters and different moving parts and pieces.
Okay. That's the cost per kilowatt hour. Is that the base? I mean,
this is the problem, right?
Okay.
Because it's so wonky. It's
okay.
So complex.
Okay.
So,
I thought I was asking an easy question. You're telling me that was not an easy question. That was not a simple question.
Yeah, it's because okay. It isn't.
They haven't defined what base rate is.
Well, I'm sure they have a definition for uh-huh. what base rate is, but you have a massive amount of adjusters. Okay. So all
some fuel cost stuff.
I think there are eight or nine of them. So there are all those different line items. Mm-hmm. On your bill, LF or LCFR adjuster. I mean, there's like all of the different.
I mean, like the fuel cost one, for example. If
correct.
They have to buy oil from somebody and the price of oil goes up, they get to recover it.
Right.
The price
exactly.
of oil goes down, they're supposed to take it down.
Exactly. Yeah. And so all of these adjusters, which directly impact the bills that you, well, mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're an APS customer, but that we pay every month. Affect our mm-hmm. bills. And so all of these adjusters are handled outside of rate cases, and mm-hmm. they have not been part of the rate cases in the past.
So in effect, to take the one that I know, fuel costs, mm-hmm. they just say our fuel costs have gone up by this. I assume they have to document it.
Yes.
And that adjustment gets made accordingly.
Correct. And so, for instance, you'll see typically when the adjusters go up, they will put a little notice. There'll be a little bill insert with that notice saying that
the price is going
to go up. Price is
going up and we couldn't help it because these are external
right.
factors, et cetera.
When they go down, you'll see them push
We're pushing your rates down.
Big, huge press releases with much ado about, you know,
sure.
their that
you can't
money.
You can't blame me. They're trying to I mean, that's the PR side of this.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I've also, you know, brought up to the commission that it should be treated equally. If you're mm-hmm. going to push out a press release, you know, when a few bucks is going to get taken off, that same press release should be required when it's going to go up because mm-hmm. it's directly impacting people's bills. Mm-hmm. So back to kind of when I started this thing, I really didn't think about the fact that I was about to take on a multi-billion-dollar utility monopoly.
The David and Goliath analogy seems perhaps inadequate.
Yeah, it was really, really intense.
And by the way, blanked on his name, the guy that writes all the books. He wrote a book about that and said, you know, that's essentially...
Malcolm Gladwell.
Gladwell, thank you very much.
Yes,
he said
welcome.
David had better technology. That's not the analogy you want.
Yeah, exactly. So when I started this, I was just like, oh, I can start a petition and file a formal complaint. And I had
no idea what you're getting into.
I had no idea what I was getting into, even given what I do for a living.
Okay, so you got a multi-day hearing.
Yes, in September. Uh-huh. But so there were...
I assume by this point you've brought in some other folks to help.
Well, so I realized very quickly that I was going to need an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I realized in trying to find an attorney is that Arizona Public Service has a large number of folks all over the state, either on retainer or people are conflicted out or people may want their money in the future. And so I set up a legal fund so I would have my own money carrot to dangle,
mm-hmm.
and thankfully was able to find an attorney, Adam Stafford, who actually used to be the former policy advisor to Commissioner Bill Mundell when he was in office.
Okay.
So he had
some relevant
that
expertise.
Specific uh-huh. experience because it is so kind of wonky and mm-hmm. works differently mm-hmm. than a lot of different things. So
yeah, this is not, this can't just be my rates are too high, cut them back.
Yeah, exactly. And so I found Adam Stafford, and then we started kind of game planning, and then I realized also very quickly I needed to find kind of a data.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You need a number cruncher. Accountant, actuary, somebody.
Yep.
Because these get very quantitative.
Oh yeah, and we're talking about, you know, such a massive shell game, for lack mm-hmm. of a better word, with all of these moving parts and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found an expert who doesn't necessarily have expert in rate making, because that wasn't what we were looking at. We were just looking at what is the actual reality mm-hmm. of people's bills because of this rate hike. And so Abhay Paggonkar is the expert that I found, who, I mean, just did a massive amount of work in building, you know, models and breaking it all apart so that we could answer the question, how much are people actually paying?
Okay, you go before the commission, and we will return with the end of the story, at least insofar as it has played out at this point, when we return with Stacey Champion in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with Dragon Slayer. Stacey Champion took on APS initially all by her lonely, but where we left the story, she picked up an attorney and a numbers guru, and she's before the commission. Pick up the story. Tell us what happens.
So what we basically discovered within all of this was that there were folks who saw a 95% increase on their bills all the way to an 81% decrease.
Wow.
On their bills. Yeah. And so I have just kind of pushed over and over, like, at what point does the body, the Corporation Commission, take culpability for
90% increase with constant use? I mean, I see
overall.
How you,
so,
but I could see somebody's bill go up because they use more.
These are averages, right?
Okay.
And
okay.
So, but at what point do you just admit fault for a flawed rate design?
Okay.
Where do you come up with 4.5% from that, right? And so, as another example, we've seen APS profits soar. As an example of the shareholder value, it's increased $341 million in 2018, $3.3 billion over the last 3 years, and $5.1 billion over the last 5 years.
You know what that is on a percentage basis?
I know that their revenues were up. It was, I think, I want to say over $17 million is what they reported in the first quarter of 2019. And last year at that same time, it was just over $3 million, I believe. So we're talking about substantial increases. But so we just had our final go in front of the Corporation Commission 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago yesterday. Though the commission would not vote to basically have a do-over, they have they're making APS file an entirely new rate case, which is to be filed by October of this year.
This is to justify what they did in 2017?
I don't even know if it's to justify what they did, but because they weren't willing to basically turn things back.
Okay, they're not willing to reduce the rates, is that rate increase still
in
basically
effect?
Being let? I know it's in effect, but are we still litigating, or are they presenting data for some future?
Yeah. So my complaint is basically done at this point.
Okay.
They didn't dismiss it.
Then what did they?
They found that relief was granted with the rate review that came after my complaint.
Okay.
So, and what that does, I mean, there are some really big wins in here of how they're going to be doing these things moving forward.
Okay.
Regard to the adjusters and making those be part of the rate cases.
Okay.
They're also going to be doing what is called kind of a BIN analysis of what is the reality, what are the actual numbers, so there aren't these large discrepancies in winners and losers. I'm sure as a lot of people have heard, it is now confirmed that at least two APS customers died in 2018 after APS shut off their power in the middle of the summer. Stephanie Pullman owed $51 on her bill. They shut off her power. She died. Her coroner report states it was caused heat was a contributing factor to her death. So
now APS has since indicated they're changing their practices in that regard, I believe.
Well, there is. So the Arizona Corporation Commission put an emergency moratorium in place so that their regulated utilities could not shut anybody off until October 15th of this year.
In other words, the idea being in the heat season, we're not going to.
Correct. And there are numerous states across the country. I mean, I come from Minneapolis originally.
There you want to do it in the winter.
My mind was boggled that there wasn't that kind of regulation here in Arizona tied to heat and cold for folks up north as well. Our most vulnerable populations are the ones affected. You were talking about seniors earlier, and we have a lot
of
folks
here. That was the common thread in the show, yes.
on fixed income. Stephanie Pullman was, her Social Security check was, just around $1,000 a month she had to live on, and she lost her life over this. So there was a bill that I worked on last session that is a utility shutoff protection that is both temperature and date based. I think that this is a big public health issue. So I think there are a lot of positives that have come out of this. I still have some time to decide whether or not I want to do any sort of an appeal. I'm actually meeting with my attorney next week to go over that.
The appeal would be to take it above into the courts, above the Corporation Commission?
That's an option.
And you'll get into jurisdiction issues on that, I assume. Part of what you'll have to say is, do the courts have jurisdiction?
Yeah, so I still need to kind of figure out, do I want to let that go and move forward and then be involved somehow with the new rate case from a consumer advocacy standpoint? Do I not? Do I, I still have a bunch of public records requests outstanding. It's been one of those situations, the more I dig, the more I find.
I think there's a general principle to that effect. The more you dig, the more you find.
Yeah, there are a lot of layers, but I think another important takeaway is the fact that there are three seats opening up on the Corporation Commission in 2020. And it is going to be vital that we look for those who are not bought by those who are supposed to be regulating, one, and we need consumer champions in there. When we as captive ratepayers have no choice in who is our energy provider, then, you know, those regulators are that much more important to making sure
this isn't like your cell phone service. If T-Mobile sticks it to you and doubles your bill, you have other choices you can go to.
Right.
With your electricity, you don't have that choice. That's the logic of why regulation.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a lot of discussion now spinning out about deregulation as well, to kind of get rid of this monopoly situation we have. There was just a recent I don't remember the name of the firm off the top of my head, but they basically rate customer service experience for all the utilities, and Arizona Public Service is literally at the bottom of the barrel for this very big entity who rates customer service. So as a monopoly, I don't think that they have had the push to give that customer service.
It reminds me of the old Lily Tomlin routine.
Which one?
We're the phone company.
Oh yes,
and
we don't.
And we don't care.
Yeah, yes.
That is not exclusively to APS, but it is a problem
in general
with a monopoly.
Absolutely.
If you only have one provider, then the provider does not have to care. It's nice if they do.
Right.
It's laudable if they do, but for their economic existence, they don't have to. That's the problem with monopolies.
Yeah.
And there are some things like electric service that are natural monopolies. It's hard to envision how you could structure, with current technology, how you could structure an electrical grid without having a monopoly.
There are plenty of states who are doing it and doing it successfully, and there's a chance for it to cost a little bit more money for people on the front end, but overall, it actually saves both money and increases customer satisfaction because these companies actually have to work to keep your business, which I think is important at the end of the day.
Okay, you get the final word. Stacy Champion, Citizen. We will be back next week in the Think Tank. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. And anybody can follow me at ChampPR on Twitter also if they want to.
Say that again. I think there's a dash in there, isn't there?
No, just on it's ChampPR on Twitter. I'm easy to find. I'm happy for people to reach out.
Quick question, short answer. Would you do it again if you knew what you're getting into?
Yes, actually. I would.
Okay. Thank you very much, Stacy Champion.
Thank you for having me.
See you next week in the Think Tank.
Love.